Good evening, glory, hallelujah to ya. What the heck's your story? What's going through ya? Conquistadors and conquistadorettes, this is the glorified version of a Bassin Talk Show, and I'm your host, Pat Renwick. Hello, Bass Galaxy. Hello. Hello, hello. How are you? Happy Wednesday to you. Happy Wednesday. On a 7 o'clock. Coming from you here in Hammond, Indiana. An undisclosed location in Hammond, Indiana. And I'm feeling good. I don't know about you. And you know why I'm feeling good? Because Uncle Denny Brower's coming on the show tonight. Yes! Uncle Den. Oh my goodness gracious. So here's the thing. Here's the thing, Bass Galaxy. Like, so we've had Denny on the show plenty of times, as you may or may not know. We haven't featured Denny in a while. And we did a little bit of Denny history, of course, last time we featured Denny. And tonight it's going to be more or less schooled by Denny Brower. Yes, that's right. A little bass class, so to speak, with legend icon Denny Brower. Now here's the thing. So here's the cool thing about when Andy and I get to do these shows with legends. It's we get to ask selfish questions. Let's just be honest. We get to ask things that we want to know about. So here is what we're doing to pay it forward, so it's not so selfish. We're going to have two of you lucky viewers, two lucky Denny Brower fans, get to play cleanup for me. So if I forget something, you get to zoom in. Andy, how are you handling this? Ladies and gentlemen, Andrew Ellenberger, he's a ginger ninja, by the way. That's Andy Ellenberger. He produces the hell out of this thing. Hi, Andy.
How are we doing?
Hi.
So we are going to have Jake randomly pick two in the chat board.
Okay.
On the Facebook chat.
Gotcha.
He will DM you if you get picked. If you have Zoom, if you're able to do it, if you have a good question, he'll give you the Zoom link. When you join in on the Zoom, put your name and where you're from so I know who it is.
Gotcha.
And then we'll bring you in when it's that time for the segment. So
two peeps.
Two people.
Two peeps. Okay.
So keep watching the show. You'll know when it's about that time.
And you're playing cleanup.
Yep.
You're playing cleanup for me. So make them no Senko questions.
No.
We're not having that.
Make mama proud.
We're the good good. Like dig deep.
Good
dig
stuff.
Deep for Mr. Brower. You know what I'm saying? That's the deal right there. You feeling good, Andy?
Yeah.
It's a Wednesday night. This is a glorified version of a bass fishing talk show. I like paying things forward. I think that that somebody is going to come up with something good that we forgot about. So let's hope here. Hey, right here, right now, I want to congratulate Mr. Cooper Gallant. Yeah. Yes, sir, on your open win there, Cherokee. Good job, Coop. You're freaking awesome. You're a champ, dude. You're a Canadian champ. The opens. It's pretty awesome. See you at the BMC. I like those yapkas. Good luck to our horses in the race tomorrow at the Elite Series at Chickamauga. Yes, at Chickamagugu. Good luck to my brothers out there tomorrow. I want to tell you, like, I've only had the boat out a couple times this year, my boat. And, man, I love running that dang aluminum boat. There's something special about it. I forget all the time how nice it is to just get up and go and got up and went. You know what I mean, Ginge? That Pro XS, dude, with the XF-189, that Crestliner, it's just light. It's fast. It's light. And it's loaded with Maxent, yet it still gets up and goes. So check it out, CrestlinerBoats.com, the XF line. Check it out from 115, or no, I think from 75 or something, to up to 150. Offering you all kinds of options. Speaking of Berkeley and Maxent, it is Maxent season. It always makes sense for Maxent. But here's the deal. The new Berkeley 3/8 finesse jig is a gem. It's a freaking gem. I don't know what to tell you. Now, here's the other deal. Like, jigger craws, creature hogs, that's nice behind there. But don't forget about the shapes, the regular old-fashioned chunk shape. Ginge, what do they call it? Maxent power chunk? Or what is the hell is it?
The power chunk?
Just the one that looks like the zoo.
Meaty chunk.
The meaty chunk. Yes, that's the deal. It's Maxent. It's superior to no other scent. Or every scent. I don't know what
every
that means. Yeah, every other scent in the world. Except Maxent. We don't even know what I'm saying. Hey, but here's another thing I do know what I'm saying that works every time this time of the year. Fritz Sides. Ginge, who's got Fritz Sides?
Every Omnia.
Yeah, Omnia's got freaking Fritz Sides. And you're like, everybody's got them right now because you were mad. You're like, everybody's throwing a damn Fritz Side now. Way to go. Just stop talking about Fritz Sides.
Let everybody know.
Stop talking about... I'm sorry, but I think freaking awesome. It's our job. Impulse lithium batteries. Guess what? Get up and go. Got up and went. Lighten the load. And 36 volts in one battery. I dig it. It's all right. It's the deal right there. Hey, if you haven't signed up, Half a Spot Official. Big things coming up. HalfaSpotOfficial.com and go follow, like them on the Insta. Sims, thank you for keeping me warm and toasty. That's been happening here a lot lately in the north. Yesterday out there in just a vest, and then boom, all of a sudden it's like that Mother Nature opens the gale force can of winds, and we're it's crazy. And thank God for layers. Layers is an amazing adventure. Do you know that? An amazing layers is an adventure in inventions. You know what I'm saying, Jench? You don't even know what I'm saying. Tay, here's something I wanted. I'm making observations. Today's opening is observations, like that I made on the water. Because here's another observation. I should have broke a regular trolling motor handle many times with some problems I was having yesterday. But that G-force is tough. It's tough, dude. Beavers can't even chew through the G-force handle. Did you know that? Beavers cannot chew through it. Moving right along. Speaking of TH Marine and beavers, I don't know what that segue was, but had a good time on the Bass Buzz with Luke Duncan last week. It's available now on the podcast. Ginge gets them up on all platforms. Ginge, we got a special like and share tonight. We do. It's a lot of stuff going on and a lot of words here in this opening, but the like and share is kind of a deal. I think it's like a whole barrel of whiskey or something. Is it? No. Isn't it not? It's not a whole barrel of whiskey, is it, Ginge? No, but it's a bunch. Uh-oh. Look at these two. They took their whiskey home. Look at you, Gypsy and Gypsette. Yeah.
Going on?
Cheers. L'chaim. Solanche. What's going on, man? There?
How's everybody doing?
We're doing good. How are you doing?
Good.
Great. Good. Uncle Denny's going to be on tonight, so you know what I did.
Yeah, you got whiskeyed up. You took your whiskey home.
We might have had dinner before that.
Maybe. But typically when you guys, you know, see me, I'm drinking a 10-cup rye old fashioned.
Yeah.
That's what I drink in my old fashions. When I drink, you know, whiskey sodas, whiskey on the rocks, I drink regular 10 cup. Tonight, in honor of Uncle Denny, I'm drinking the 10 cup 10 year.
Wow. Holy cow. Courtney.
Yeah.
Courtney.
Yeah.
He's on the 10 year, Court.
Yeah. And I like this.
We'll see what this evening brings.
Yeah.
You never know.
You might get lucky.
But I would like, if Mr. Brower's listening, I would like to send him a bottle of 10 year out of respect.
Oh.
Because I've watched him basically my entire life.
I'm sure Uncle Denny would greatly appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate everything he's done for the sport and talking about the brand when he comes on your fine show. So,
Denny's the man. And speaking of the man and the woman, just I would be amiss if I did not formally introduce Luke Foley, the Whiskey Gypsy, and Courtney from 10 Cup Whiskey. Give it up for the 10 Cup Word of the Week duo right here. And every week.
I haven't even heard what it's going to be this weekend.
This is going to be a good one.
I'm surprised to all of us.
So here's the deal.
It's going to be a little bit of two words.
Okay.
I think the Bass Galaxy will know what these are.
I like it. Hold on. Slow down, fools, because I got. I was teasing with the like and share at the beginning before we brought you on, but I gotta go full out here now. So, 10 Cup Whiskey tonight is sponsoring the like and share contest, and I don't know. I heard it's not a barrel of whiskey. It's not a barrel of monkeys, and it's not a barrel of monkeys, and it's not a. I don't know what it is, but it's some kind of. Like magnificent prize pack. What could it be?
I'll make it worth your while.
Wow. So it's a mega hella super supreme worth your while Tin Cup Whiskey pack from Luke Foley, the Whiskey Gypsy, and Tin Cup Whiskey. And Courtney, of course.
I feel like I'm probably going to be, like, you know, tearing things out of the office to make sure it works and make sure it's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I want you to cherry pick the good gift for the peeps. Okay.
I will.
Yeah.
I have some ideas already.
All they have to do, Luke, is what? What do they have to do? It's that easy. How do you win on this show?
They just got to like and share.
They like and share this live feed. That's right. Take it off of private. Okay. Mm-hmm. And like and share the live feed at the end of the show. Courtney and Luke are coming back to announce this gigantic winner of this prize. And I imagine he'll be 10-year'd up even more by then. And it could be like a ventriloquist dummy, and Courtney's just moving Luke's mouth, like, and he's saying
and
words.
Maybe I'll be doing all the talking later. It's quite possible.
All right.
All right, back to the tin cup word of the week. Word of the week. Come on.
Oh, Luke wants to, you know, defend himself
story,
for a second.
But okay, we'll just give him the word of the week. So it's two words.
There we go.
And I think Bass Galaxy knows, because Uncle Denny's on, we can't just have one word.
Okay.
Two words.
Okay.
Pitching, flipping.
Oh, Lord Almighty.
Huh?
Okay. I rarely say pitching. I do say flip a lot and flip in, but pitching, Denny's going to say pitching.
But so. Denny on, those two words are going to be said a lot.
Yeah.
So whether I'm on or not tonight, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
we don't even know. That's how I feel tonight. I'm so excited about Danny coming on. Everything's like, boom. Let's get to Danny.
Can I do a reenactment for you, Pat?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so I sent Danny some stuff this summer.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
You did not tell me that you gave him my number.
Correct.
So I am walking by this chair. On my way out to work, and my phone dings, okay? And I had to sit down and compose myself, because Denny Brower, the legend himself, had texted me saying all these very nice things about what Tin Cup had done, and so on and so forth. And I sat here for the longest time.
Yeah.
So I think it's fitting that I'm still sitting in this chair, excited to watch this episode, drinking 10 here. Yeah, just going to have a good time.
How apropos. That's all we could say. That's all we could say.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Hey. And all they got to do to win a bunch of Tin Cup is like and share the live Facebook feed. You're coming back to announce the winner. Also, two lucky viewers get to zoom in with Denny at the end of the Denny segment.
That's pretty cool.
That's insane. Okay. And did I get everything? I mean, I think we got it all, right? Everyone wants Uncle Denny. So now let's just put the power poles down. Let's relax. And when we get back, it's legend Denny Brower. Hey, Courtney, and what's your name again? Oh, yeah, Whiskey Gypsy. Yeah, that's you. Hey, see you soon at the end of the show with the big prize.
We'll see you
then. I'm Pat Renwick.
Bye.
Put them down. Power poles down. Coming back. Like and share. Big contest. Denny Brower. Amazing. Peace.
This is the mountain. And this is Mountain Whiskey. Unspoiled. Untamed. Forever wild. There's no safety net. No way down. Up here. It's just man. And the mountain. And his tin cup. Tin Cup Whiskey. Mountain Whiskey. Nobody wants to run out of power when they're on the water. There is a better way. Introducing the Charge Marine Power Management Station from PowerPole that does the work of three devices, a traditional battery charger, a charge on the run, and an emergency start system, PowerPole Charge.
The TH Marine HydroWave H2 KVD Edition is a surefire way to ignite a feeding frenzy. The HydroWave utilizes a sound-emitting technology that imitates bait fish and other feeding fish below the surface that preys on the competitive nature of bass and other game fish to get you more bites. The HydroWave is another way that TH Marine has you covered from transom to trolling motor.
citizens of the Bass Galaxy, we are honored and proud to welcome an icon, a legend, one of the most viable anglers to ever hit the water. Bass Galaxy, give it up for the one and only Mr. Denny Brower. Yes! Uncle Den!
How you doing?
How are you doing?
I'm just doing wonderful.
You look wonderful. Surrounded by wildlife and trophies. That's very appropriate.
It really is. That pretty well sums my life up.
Wildlife and trophies. I like it. I like it, man. Hey, I just got to tell you right away, Denny, I've been so excited about this since we texted earlier last week. It's always pretty special for us here at StrayCast when we have the opportunity to have a gentleman as yourself on the show. So we immediately thank you for this privilege, Denny. It's pretty cool.
Well, I appreciate that, Pat. It's a great honor. Anytime you want to have me on, I'll be more than happy to come on.
Well, thanks, man. I mean, Denny, it makes us real happy. Like, I got to tell you, when I was a little kid, man, I would have never figured, like, you know, I'd get texts from Denny Brower. Like, I just never even figured that was a real world. You know, I didn't even think anything like this would ever happen. And it's pretty cool, bud. It's pretty cool. I mean, like, here's what I gotta say. You to us, Denny, in the world of proper bassin, are the original proper bassin man. You are the proper bassin man. Now, here's why I say that. Now, no disrespect to any of the other proper bassin men, forefathers of the game. Here's why I say this. There were proper bassin men before you. That is 100% certain. Bass started in 68, man. Like, and you were what, 78 you come in the game about? Is that right? 76?
I fished Federation National, I want to say, in like 77 or 78, somewhere in there.
Okay, so there were definitely proper bassin men ahead of you. Klon, Dance. You know, just Nixon, your hero, Larry Nixon, these guys, you know, but here's why I say you are the OG proper bassin man, because you're the first one to bring it out. You're the first one to basically call out the laws of proper bassin. I'm not talking about technique, Denny. I'm not talking about technique. There was technique stuff happening and people were speaking on it. But you were the first one to kind of be a little boisterous and be like, hey, bud, I was here first. That's not proper. Get the heck out of my spot. Hey, bud, I don't believe you did that on the water. Or, no, this isn't how tournaments maybe should be run. Maybe we should try something this way. You were never shy to speak your mind. And when you saw wrongs, you brought them to the forefront. And that's why, in our opinion, Denny, you are the OG proper bassin man, bud.
Well, I appreciate that, Pat. But there's always, it's always been a belief of mine that there's a right way and there's a wrong way. And we all need to do things the right way. It just makes life so much simpler. And when you're on the water, I realize there's a lot of gray lines. But, I mean, everybody knows whether they're right or wrong. Once in a while, they just need a little reminder. And I was more than happy to give some of them a reminder.
Yeah, you really were. But, I mean, not just your peers and your competitors, but you told it that way to the fans. You told it that way to the tournament organizers. You to the sponsors. You were always, man, you were the first guy that kind of didn't give an F about. Maybe you were the first guy that was going to ask for permission rather, or for forgiveness rather than permission in bassin. Does that make sense, Denny?
Well, I think my goal and a lot of guys' goals were to always try to move the sport forward. And if you saw something that needed changing, it wasn't going to get changed unless you spoke your mind. And I never was real shy about not speaking my mind on some issues. And at times, it probably got me put on the bench, so to speak. But maybe it did help in some ways to make the sport a little bit better in the long run.
Yeah, but I mean, and it's probably to do with your personality as well. I mean, quite frankly, I mean, like, again, like guys like Klun, they kind of just kept their head down and fished. They were thinking the same way you were, you know, Billy Dance, Jimmy Houston, OG proper bassman, but they're entertaining. They weren't going to go into things right then, you know, but then here comes Denny Brower, and Denny Brower is like, this is how it is. This is what bassing is. This is how it should be. And that's why we love you, bud. let's just flip a jig, you know. That's pretty much what it is. But Denny, everybody relates to Denny Brower. I mean, that's a bassin' man. I mean, let's face it. Anybody that knows any history of the game relates to you. I want to just a couple brief things before we really get into this, Den. But like, to me personally. Like, I see some things in your career that I related to. And why, let's just say why you're special to us here at Straight Cast. And the whole thing with, like, the Letterman thing, okay? Like, you on Letterman, you with Ozzy. Like, for a guy that's from, let's just say, multiple multiverses, okay? I love music, I love bass fishing, and I love talk shows. And, like, all that came together in a glorious place for me as a fan of all of that. And that's pretty cool. So I related to that. And here's what it is. It's consistency. And you're consistent. Letterman, always consistent. Might be the same show all the time, different guests, you know, little variations. You know, Denny Brower, man, like, you're consistent, bud. Like, it's you're, there's a flip bite, Denny Brower's on. And I think people enjoy consistency. So that's enough about that. But Denny, I don't know, bud, let's get schooled. You ready to get schooled? Are you ready to school people, Denny?
Man, I'm always ready to school somebody.
So we've done history before with you. Last time you were featured, you've been on tons of shows as cameos with Hackney and Christy and Seth and Billy Lowen. You were on with, but we haven't featured you since 19. And we did history then. We did Denny history. So if you want to get some history, back up on that one. But now we're gonna get schooled. We're gonna talk about Denny the Derber and Denny the Flipper. Okay, we're getting real tonight, buddy. We're
after this show, yeah.
We're breaking it down, man. We're breaking it down because I mean, so what came first, the Derber or the Flipper?
Oh, the Flipper.
The Flipper. All right. So here's what I got to ask you, Denny. Do you remember your first time? You know, I mean, everybody remembers their first time. You know what I mean, Uncle Den.
What are you talking about, flipping?
Oh, yeah, flipping. Yeah, flipping. We're not talking about flipping. Yeah. You remember your first time out there flipping? Tell me about it.
Yeah, I really do. I'd read a little bit about the technique. D. Thomas had come from the West Coast to Bull Shoals, won a tournament. Bassman, I think that was in 1975. Bassmaster had an article, so I got to read about it, and I had a buddy that built rods, and I go, you need to build me a flipping stick, because you couldn't buy anything like that.
Right.
So got a couple of saltwater rods, cut them down to, I don't know, 7.5 feet, and we went out to the local lake and drove the boat right in the middle of a bunch of willow trees, shut the motor off, and started to dab our baits around in the willow trees there, and in a little bit, I caught one about 2 pounds, and that just kind of hooked me on the whole deal right there.
That's awesome. So I love that you custom made the rod out of a saltwater pole, because we know there was only 5/6 around at that time. And then what? Tell me about the reel. What was like the first reel, the first line, the first lure, the first experience?
It was an old Ambassador reel, if I remember correctly, like a 5500C.
Okay, big old can reel. I gotcha. Yeah.
In line back then, we were using monofilament. Don't ask me what kind or even what size. I don't remember, but okay. I'm sure it was real thick and real stiff. And not that friendly to use, but that's what we had to work with back then.
What was the bait? What were you flipping at that time? What was the first one?
It was actually a hair jig, which I got from the West Coast. It had a weed yard that you actually kind of had a mold and curve around the hook. Had a terrible hook in it, and on behind it just had a pork frog, and that's what I flipped for the first couple of years, until we start to get into, you know, baits that had living rubber and things like that.
Was there a weed guard on that first hair jig, or were you kind of just daubing it around the Willis without a weed guard?
It had a weed guard on it. It had a fiber weed guard that you kind of mold around the hook. It's actually an adjustable weed guard.
Interesting.
And it was fairly weedless, but the hook in it was absolutely horrible.
In an old hair jig. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I mean, like, I know before D. Thomas, they were doodle socking and jigger pulling with baby bottle nipples and pieces of actual pork razorback. You know, I mean, that was the original baits, wasn't it, Uncle Dan?
Exactly.
I mean, that's pretty nuts, man. Hey, I want to back up to the thing about Bassmaster for a second, because you said you read a little thing about D. Thomas in there, and remind me if you can, or Andy, when we start talking about the Derbers, I think Bassmaster changed your life, and I'm going to tell you why then. Okay, I'm going to tell you why then, but I think it's pretty amazing that you already mentioned Bassmaster. But back to the flipping. All right, so Denny Brower learns how to flip. You're in a bunch of Willas. You get hooked on you hook a 2-pounder, and now you're like, this is amazing. This is better than making little roll casts with a 5.5-foot pistol grip rod. I'm crossing their eyes, and boom, they're in the boat. It's nuts. So now what happens? Now what happens with the whole flipping concept in your brain? Do you take it to tournaments? Are you on the water for a while and in a non-competitive level fishing the flipping technique? What's the deal?
No, I was actually about 1 year away when I started flipping from starting tournament fishing, and I started fishing club tournaments, and our lakes were very, very conducive. They were, you know, that technique. They were new, had a lot of flooded timber, a lot of brush, and fairly off-colored water, so it set up perfect for that technique. And the more I did it, the more confidence I got in it, and was experiencing quite a bit of success with the technique. So I just kind of expanded it to different bodies of water. And obviously, when I went to the tour, I felt it would give me the best opportunity to win.
Yeah, and I mean, it's. I think you are the most outstanding example in bass fishing history of someone to really take one technique and just force feed fish with it. Like, you're so good at that. Like, you're just like, I'm Denny Brower, eat this jig. You know, it's pretty nuts, Dan.
Well, I think there's a little misconception there. all anglers have a certain strength, and when the conditions, the lake, everything sets up right for their strength, they may only be fishing against 8 or 10 guys in the whole field that are as equally good at that technique as they are, so the odds go up of winning. And, you know, you have a stretch where you have the right conditions, and it plays into your technique. Obviously, you got a better chance of winning tournaments. But if I look back over the career in tournaments I've won, topwater come into play, spinnerbait, baits, a lot of other lures come into play. But it sure helps when you got a strength to rely on.
Yeah, that's you did. You exploited your strength, and that's a great quality. I mean, it's an amazing quality that athletes are able to really capitalize on any of their strengths. Same thing for like a jump shot, bud. You know what I mean? If you got a good jump shot in basketball, exploit it. Right? That's what the athletes do. I think it's pretty cool. Hey, you touched on something at the when you first started talking about when you were beginning to flip, and that was the watercolor was conducive. You had a lot of fertile water, good cover in the water. Was this Ozarks? Were you in Missouri at the time?
No, I was still living in Nebraska.
You were still in Nebraska as a brickie.
Yeah, they had a chain of lakes around Lincoln, Nebraska called the Salt Valley Chain of Lakes, and they were fairly new, and the fishing actually was very, very good. You just didn't catch many fish over 5 pounds. But as far as going out there and having a good day, there was many days I was able to catch 5 fish that weighed 20 to 25 pounds. But you weren't going to get any better than that.
I got you. And then in what I found phenomenal about your flipping prowess is especially like in those Ozark days. A lot of people were really into the dock skipping technique, but you're still out there with the 7-6 flip stick, and that's your strong point. Tell me a little bit like why that's your, are you actually skipping with the flip stick in a pitching type deal?
When I first started out, Pat, the flipping stick itself, I thought was a real detriment because it really took away all your ability to make accurate presentations. It took away your ability to make a hook set without maybe tearing too big a hole in a fish because they were just basically rebar type rods, very, very stiff, no action. And I worked to design a flipping stick with an 80-20 type action where 20% of the length right out the tip was flexible enough it would help you be able to pitch a bait so that you could flip with it and pitch it. And once it loaded up, you still had that 80% of backbone to, you know, really drive the hook in and land the fish. And once I went to that rod, the success level really picked up. It enabled me, as you said, to be able to skip a bait, skip it underneath, laying down trees, up underneath boat docks. And it really opened up a window of opportunity to reach fish that most guys weren't able to reach. So you could go down a bank behind somebody, whether it was boat docks or laying down trees, and you were actually fishing for different fish than they were fishing for. And plus some of the biggest fish that live in a lake, live in them hard to reach places. So it really helped to improve my success.
And you're with the 7-6 flip stick, you're flipping docks. Is it just a quick underhand skip pitch? Is that what you're doing? Or are you just focusing on each individual piling? Is it a combination? Are you actually skipping in conjunction with the flip in those OG days? What were you doing?
The two things in order to do it right, because as you transition down a bank, you're going to run into multiple types of cover. And some of them you might want to be flipping to be more precise. Other ones you might need to skip or make the pitch in order to get to the target. So yeah, you need a rod that you can do all techniques with to where you're not picking one up, laying one down, et cetera. And this makes you more efficient with your presentations and time utilization if you're in a tournament itself.
I like that. And I know that kind of seemed like maybe a silly question, but the purpose of it was, is what you just answered. So many people think that they need that 7-foot rod, that 6-8 rod, whatever, for skipping docks, you know, where you're disproving that. You have the 7-6 and you have the extra leverage and the power in conjunction with it. So I think that's pretty cool. And you obviously made it work well for you on the Ozarks when that transition happened, that's for sure.
Yeah, a lot of it's just time on the water. The more time you spend on the water, the more comfortable you're going to get with your equipment, the more you're going to figure out actually what you can do with it, figure out its limitations, and hopefully it'll make you a better angler because of that.
What's the number one Denny Brower dock skipping lure? What's your number one go-to dock skipping?
Nowadays, it's the Strike King structure jig, just the way that bait's built. It skips. I mean, it skips like a rock.
It's so got it's a cool very, head on it, yeah.
Yeah, it's got that cobra style head, and it's really designed for that technique, but it's still versatile enough to fish it a lot of other ways. But back in the days when I first started skipping, a lot of times, if they were a real tough lake, I'd go to skipping a tube just because a tube would go back in there easier than what a heavier jig would. But I could skip really any bait as long as it wasn't too heavy. Part of the key was how you rigged a bait. Trailer-wise and that, you didn't want it too big and too bulky. You wanted it where it was designed to skip, so to speak. But it's just like skipping a rock. So much of it's the angle, where to start the skip. You don't want to start it too far back. You don't want to start it too early to where it won't reach its destination. So once again, it's just practice.
I got you. So Denny Brower's number one is the structure jig, and also back in the day a tube and a variance of. So I ask you now, the jig itself, are you on that structure jig or whatever jig it was back in the day? Are you trimming it up? What's the size and what's the ideal trailer for your perfect dock skipping jig?
Back in the days, Pat, I was of the belief that you needed a light jig to do a lot of that. So I fished quarter ounce jigs. I fished 3/8 ounce jigs. I always had a pork trailer because that's really all we had available that was right. And once in a while, I'd put a piece of plastic worm on the shank of the hook before I put the pork frog on to help secure the frog. So
yeah.
When I skip it.
Absolutely. So, I mean, back in the days you were 1/4, 3/8 with the pork. Like, so what's your go-to now? How are you, what's the structure jig and what's the trailer and are you trimming it? What are you doing?
I don't even have any 1/4, 3/8 ounce jigs in my tackle box now. The lightest I have are 1/2 ounce, and that almost seems light to me. I think we figured out that you can get so many reflex strikes from fish as the bait's coming by them. You don't want them to get that good a look. Fish get a lot more pressure nowadays. So if I'm pitching a bait, 1/2 ounce would be my number one choice. If I needed a little more weight to penetrate the cover, I'll go to a 3/4 ounce jig. If I'm fishing out in deep water, like here on Lake Amistad, I'm always using the 3/4 ounce structure jig out there deep, or a football jig.
Sure. And you kind of touched on that ROF. That rate of fall is so important. I think the first MLF event or the cup, they were the cup deals back then. You were flipping some docks, and that rate of fall was a huge deal for your victory there. I remember back in the day.
It was. I was catching some of them on a jig, but I was also catching a bunch of them on a green pumpkin tube in extremely shallow water. And it was a deal where you had to skip it up underneath the cover and try to reach fish that, you know, other people weren't reaching. So that played a huge part in the success during that tournament.
It's a certain special skill to be able to skip heavy baits. You know what I mean? It's a very important, the timing thing, isn't it, Danny?
It really is. Obviously, you can get more distance with a heavier bait skipping, but once in a while, if you get just a little bit of ripple on the water, you got to lighten that bait up in order to get it to skip.
Yeah, it's. I remember last time you were on the show, you told us how you used to just love that 3/8 size, but you don't even hardly have any anymore because it's the 1/2 ounce, the efficiency. It's the efficiency.
Well, some of it has to do with where I fish a lot, too. You know, I'm not traveling all over the country anymore. If I was, there'd be areas of the country where I'd probably need to have that 3/8 ounce jig again. But here on this lake, we don't have any boat docks to skip under. So,
hey, when you were on that boat dock deal, and what's your tube setup? Your skipping boat dock, flipping boat dock tube setup?
Well, at super shallow water, I was actually using a 3/8 ounce slip sinker, and it was pegged to a 4 or 5/0 tube style hook, and with the striking flipping tube, which is 4.5 inch tube, and that was it. And always on once in a while on 20-pound test if it was real clear water, but the majority of the time on 25-pound test cigar.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, I mean that tube, and a lot of people still don't flip a tube, do they, Denny? They just really don't.
No, they really don't. And I can give you an example of how finicky bass can be. I remember in 1998, when I did win the Bassmasters Classic, my son and I he qualified for that event too. And we were both out on High Rock Lake practicing. And back then you practiced a month ahead of time. You had like a 1 week period. And I'd found those fish flipping the jig and laying down trees. And when we went back for our official practice day right before the Classic, I started down through this line of trees and got about halfway down the bank and had yet to have a bite on the jig. And I picked the tube up, and the first tree I flipped the tube into, I got a bite, shook it off, turned the trolling motor around, went back to a tree I just flipped with the jig, got another bite on the tube, shook it off. and ended up obviously winning the Classic on a tube. Whereas if I had picked that tube up and I'd got bullheaded and stuck with the jig, I probably would not have won. And I think what the deal was, a month earlier, they may have been on crawfish. When I come back, there's a lot of shad in the area, and I think the tube did a better job of probably putting out the same pressure waves as what a shad actually would in the water. So that may have made a difference.
That's awesome that you just said that the tube put out the same pressure waves as the shad. That's a great mind right there. That's a proper bassin' man mind, Denny. Most people don't think like that. You know what I mean? That the shad waves and tubes in correlation.
Are you weird?
What's that?
Are you calling me weird?
Yeah, and I'm calling you amazing. Yeah, amazingly weird. Amazingly weird.
There you go.
Hey, I'm amazed at the evolution of your flipping as well. Like, so it seems like in the same situations, like I think a lot of people remember the old Bassmaster commercial. Like, you're like, in heavy cover, I rarely peg my weight on my tube. But then then the next time you're smashing them with it pegged. But then then 2 days later, you're out smashing them unpegged in the same heavy cover. What's the deal? How do you know? What do you do, Denny?
I pretty much always peg my slip sinker. I know different guys have different opinions on that. But if you're going into heavy cover with it, you need to keep that bait compact and keep the weight together with the bait itself. If not, you're not going to have a very good idea exactly what your lure is doing. Now, if you're casting a bait, plastic worm, whatever, then it's different. I never peg a weight when I'm casting a piece of soft plastic. So it's just the presentation itself, whether it's a vertical presentation or a horizontal presentation.
So when you won the Classic and you were flipping the tube, it was the weight was pegged?
Absolutely.
Gotcha. So I got to tell you something. I'm going to make a confession here. In my mind, all these years, as I've seen it in my, you know how minds see things, like I thought that you did not have that sinker pegged in my mind this whole time since I was a kid. That was a long time.
Yeah, back then we pegged everything with toothpicks, wooden toothpicks, and of course. A long way since then. You've got the bobber stops and the rubber T-stop pegs and different ways of doing it nowadays that are a lot more efficient.
What do you
and not near line?
What are you using now? Are you using the just the bobber stop?
I know. I actually use the rubber nails, and there's a reason for that.
Tell me.
With bobber stops are fine, but when you get a good fish on and he jumps, that weight is going to push that bobber stop on up your line, and that weight can come back down and almost act as a plug knocker on the hook.
Wow.
Whereas when you do a rubber nail, it goes on up the line away from the fish, but it does not come back down. So all he's got down by him is the hook itself. It's almost like a Carolina rig, and he can jump all he wants, and he can't throw just the hook because he's got no weight down there by him.
That's amazing. Hackney does the same thing. And then I was in Florida with Seth before the, yeah, exactly. Andy just says, wonder where Hackney learned that. And I was just in Florida with Seth before the Elites started. And I see him using them rubber nails and I'm like, what's this sneaky shit you're doing there? And he's like, yep. So I see that's kind of a thing. That's a thing, huh, Danny?
It is, but there's a little trick you can do with it.
Tell me.
You're obviously shoving the nail up from the bottom of the slip sinker, and you get it tight, and then you cut the bottom part out, and then you pull it on up a little bit more. I just want to peg the top half of the slip sinker itself, and that way it allows the line to center in the middle of the hole at the bottom of the slip sinker so that it fits better on your bait.
Oh, I like that. So explain that to me. So that you achieve that by pulling the pointy end up further than leave.
You pull it up tight, then cut the bottom off, even with the bottom of the sinker, without cutting your line, obviously.
Yeah.
And then you pull it up even tighter to where you're only pegging the upper half of the slip sinker, and then you trim the top off, and then you go ahead and pull the sinker, you know, 6-8 inches further up your line and cut that line off just in case you, you know, did any damage to it while you were snipping off those two ends.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm going to the nails. I'm doing it. I'm going to the rubber nails. I got to do it. So when, I could tell. I could tell. Hey, when you're flipping Texas rig, is it always a straight shank for you?
When I'm doing what?
When you're flipping a Texas rig, is it always a straight shank for you? So if you're on that rodent or whatever.
Oh, if I'm flipping a tube style bait, it's going to be a tube hook itself, where it's an offset type of hook where it lays parallel, the point does, with the top of the hook. If it's a solid bait, then I'm going to use a straight shank.
You're going to use a straight shank hook. Okay. And when it, so the tube hook, is that just basically an EWG style that you're referring to?
Exactly, Pat.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. So for tubes, EWG, for your rodent, beaver, crawdad type baits, it's all straight shank.
All straight shank. Exactly.
Gotcha.
So those are the two hooks that play a part in my flipping.
Okay. All right. Now, as far as like your flipping organization, do you think you're an organized guy, Denny, as far as your tackle organization and your flipping tackle?
Yeah, if we were in my Ranger boat right now and I opened one of the lids, you might think I'm a little too organized. Everything's labeled in, you know, I know exactly where everything's at. I know what color bait I need to go where to find. I'm very organized because I think I'm a creature of habit. And one thing I looked at in tournaments is how can you get an edge? And the more you organize, the more efficient you're going to be, the more you should be able to get in a few more casts during the day. And every little thing adds up to a few percentage points over your competition. So if you got to sit there and take 10 minutes to find a bait, you're losing ground, and that's not what you want to do.
How do you store your sinkers? In a box or in bags or what?
No, they're in a box.
They're in a box.
Designated for my sinkers and hooks.
And your hooks are in a box as well, in packs or individual?
No, they're in little compartments according to size.
Okay, gotcha. And how do you store your plastics? What's your method for that?
I've got everything stored in hard boxes. With some of the plastics, like some of the Rage stuff where it's critical, where they keep their form, the Rage Swimmer is a perfect example. I'm going to leave them in the package themselves to where, and I'll have a compartment where I'll have them in larger bags labeled so I know what's in that particular bag, but they're still actually in the striking package.
So, and then what about the jigs? How do you store your jigs?
I got them in a hard tackle box. I got a bunch of Bass Mafia boxes that really do a nice job. And that's what everything's stored in.
So is it like structure jig box, flipping jig box, swim jig box? Is that how you set your stuff up?
You hit it right on the money. If you open my lid, those three would jump right out at you.
Okay.
I've got a foot jig box, a structure jig box. I've got the flipping jig box. Obviously, I got a swim jig box. You've got the Thunder Cricket box, the vibrating jigs, every one is labeled and ready to go.
You get into that swing head, Denny, that structure head, that, you know, like that biffle head deal. You much into that?
Not that much. I probably should fish it a little more because I know it can be very successful. But between just fishing the structure jig and fishing the Thunder Cricket, I figure I accomplished a lot of the same thing. Part of the secret of that Thunder Cricket in time is fishing it real slow, close to the bottom and bumping the bottom quite a bit to where you're probably imparting a lot of the same action that Tommy's imparting with the biffle head.
Interesting that you said that. Do you like throwing that, your Strike King guy, you like that razor, what's it called, razor minnow, razor shad on the back? What do you throw?
I like to throw the menace on it more than anything. That regular menace grub on behind it really has a nice action. It makes it halfway compact. I throw it probably 75% of the time as my trailer, and the other 25% of the time I'm throwing a raid swimmer as the trailer behind it.
I don't
throw that razor type bait that much.
So when you're on that Menace, are you doing it with the, so it's like flat, like floaty, or do you have it sideways?
I always have it flat. I know some guys like to fish it sideways, but the action of it flat, I think, it can resemble a crawfish or it can resemble a shad, either one, or a bluegill. I throw a lot of green pumpkin down here and color the tail of the Menace chartreuse, and I know it looks just like a bluegill to the fish in the water. So you can do so many different things color-wise with that bait. And also weight-wise, I mean, 3/8 to 3/4 ounce, you can do a lot of versatile things with the different water columns.
I like that you said you're crawling that deal on the bottom. And that Menace, by the way, what an amazing shape. Just the shape of it is very, very good.
It's a great punch bait. It's a great trailer. It's a very versatile piece of plastic. And it's become one of my favorite baits that Striking ever came out with.
What's one of the biggest mistakes you see people doing when they're flipping or pitching?
Oh, boy, probably not totally aware of what their bait's doing. I fish with a lot of guys, and I know they got to buy it way before they do. It's a technique that you got to really be focused not only on the presentation, but you got to be focused on what the bait's doing at all times, whether the fish are hitting it on the drop, whether you got to pump it a couple times to get the bite. How long do you need to leave it in there? They don't pay attention once in a while to all those little details. They don't pay attention to whether their bait was on the sunny side of a tree or the shady side when they got a bite, windy side or the calm side. It goes on and on and on. But in the technique of flipping and pitching, there's so much information available that the bass will tell you when you get a bite that you really need to be aware of that and pay attention so that you can duplicate it. And the guys that pick up on those little things, man, they can fish so much faster because they know exactly how the fish are set up. They know exactly how they're hit. They know exactly how their presentation needs to be made. And their success is going to go up immensely because of that.
Yeah, it's an awareness game, that flipping. It's like aware all the time. Yeah,
The more aware you are, not only of what your bait's doing, but your surroundings, the more success you're going to have.
That's something else. Hey, you know how you always say hook sets are free? You know what I mean? Like you're. I love how you say that. And it, like, do you set up into nonsense a lot? Like, do you set up into stumps? Or are you pretty much always on? You pretty much know.
No, some of the biggest fish I've ever caught, Pat, I had no idea really whether it was a fish there or not. But I didn't have the courage to get into a feeling game with them, so I set the hook. And they ended up being a 7-8 pound bass. It's amazing the ability they have at times to get that bait. You just have to be aware that if it doesn't feel right, if it's too light or too heavy, you need to condition yourself to jerk, because what do you got to lose? Maybe your bait, once in a while you're going to get hung up. The majority of the time, if it went straight down in that cover and it feels different, it's going to be a fish. And if you get in that feeling game with him, more than likely you're going to lose.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, especially with jigs. With jigs more so than anything, sometimes I get touchy-feely with them. And then it's like, gosh, dang it. That was a fish, you know? But every time where I don't second-guess myself and just crack them, that seems to be the deal. It's, I don't know.
I soft plastics, you get a little more of that tap-tap response on the bite. And with jigs, when they're real aggressive, you get that big old thump and everybody knows they're getting a bite. But a lot of times you just get that little bitty pressure, and how they can do that without you really knowing, I don't know. But the bottom line is, if it feels heavy, jerk. If it feels light, take a couple cranks and jerk, because he's probably coming at you with a bait.
Yeah. Don't take chances. Just freaking crack them. Might as well.
Okay.
Hey,
Pat.
Oh, they sure. You know what else is amazing about hook sets? So I'm sure you've had this happen, Denny, and maybe you could shed some wisdom here. Like, you pitch under that dock, you got a perfect hook set. Whoop, you cracking them, you got the pressure on that fish, you see that jig's just buried in its throat. There's no, you don't even see the jig, you just see line. And you're like, oh yeah, come here, hoss. And then, tonk, the jig just pops out. Out of nowhere. Like, is that because big bass's mouths are so strong? Is that why that happens?
Some of it happens, Pat, because you're not using my jig, probably. More than likely, once in a while, you get a bass that it seems like the bigger they are, the harder that bony plate is in their mouth, and it can be real hard for them, for the hook to penetrate. But for some reason, they got the ability to, their jaws are so strong that they can clamp down on that bait. And in order to get that hook to penetrate, you almost got to blow their lips open to move the head of the bait a little bit so that the hook behind it can start to penetrate. And I think at times we set the hook and they're clamped down so tight that we don't get them lips parted to move that jig. And then when they finally come up and, you know, open their mouth, so to speak, the jig wasn't even hooked to start with, and it just pops out.
Yeah, I see it happen sometimes with a chatterbait, too. It's like it seems like let's face it, man, I've even had it happen on treble plugs. Like, how the heck does that happen? It's crazy, those fish.
Yeah, that's just part of the game. You can't beat yourself up too bad. And sometimes it's how they're eating the bait. There's going to be days where you're going to hook and land everything that bites you. And there's going to be other days you're scratching your head wondering what's going on. And sometimes it's how the fish are eating the bait, and there's some of it out of your control.
Hey, what's your number one line these days? You on the fluoro deal most of the time, or you on braid?
I show you right here. That right there. It's an expensive line, but that cigar tat said, without a doubt, it's the best line out there. It's fluorocarbon, and I'm going to fish it 100% of the time. Unless I'm punching. If I'm punching down in hydrilla, then I'm going to go with braid. And I usually go with 50. I can't break 50. Why go to 65? 50 will penetrate down through there a little easier. If I'm fishing a frog, fishing a plopper style bait, anything like that, I'm going to go with the braid. But for like fishing the thunder cricket, fishing jigs, anything like that offshore, I'm always going with the fluorocarbon. Normally, if I'm fishing where there's big fish, it's going to be 20 to 25. If I'm fishing out on structure, I fish a lot of 15 pound. They just came out in the Tatsu with 17 and 22 pound test, and awesome weights. They kind of fill a void. They allow you to be a little more versatile. We just got back last week from El Salto Lake in Mexico, and we were casting jigs down there. Along rocky banks and things like that. And I went with the 22 pound Tatsu just because it was going to give me a little more of an edge with those big fish. And I was amazed how that heavy a pound test line would cast. And we had zero breakoffs. It was just an awesome line to fish with.
Are you still on that black Seaguar braid too? Or do you color your braid? Do you believe in that black braid?
I still got some of that black braid. They're no longer selling it. But if you don't have that particular braid, definitely take a magic marker and color the first 3 or 4 foot black. I do think it makes a difference, especially when you punch it down into that heavy grass. A lot of people say it doesn't matter because the first thing they see is the bait coming down on their heads. And they may be right, but from a confidence standpoint, I just think it helps it blend in a little bit better.
You're going to do it no matter what.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I got you. I still end up doing that on the straight braid a lot of times, too. Hey, I want to go back to the flip and stick for a second. The actual, we're still on Denny the Flipper. Oh, you know a lot about flipping, don't you, Denny?
I've done a little bit of it over the years.
So tell me about this evolution of the flip and stick. First, you talked about the saltwater rod, custom made, and you guys were using broomsticks. And then you came up with this 80-20 concept in the flipping rod. Now, you also settled for the 7'6" length, where a lot of your peers, like, you know, at the time, Klein was on that more parabolic rod, 8-footer. You know what I mean? And then you get Hackney, who kind of goes in between the Brower flipstick and the Klein flipstick, you know, with the 8-footer. But the actions are... or a meld. You know, tell me about your development and where'd this 80-20 come from? What did you see that you liked that had 80-20?
Well, back in the early days, you're absolutely right. You had fiberglass parabolic type rods, or you had real stiff so-called flipping sticks. Those are your two choices. And they, neither one really allowed you to pitch a bait or be very accurate with it, let alone do both techniques with the same rod. So my theory was I wanted a rod where I could pitch with, flip with, and fish all types of cover with, to where I never had to lay it down, where one rod allowed me to do all those different techniques, or even make a long cast if I saw a fish break. So back then, Daiwa was one of the first rod reel companies to approach me about a sponsorship, and I went to work with them and started working with their engineers to design the flip and pitch and rod. And I don't know if you remember the old green flipping stick.
Of course I do.
But it had quite a cult following, and that's what I ended up with, a flip and pitch and combination rod. And once I got through to the engineers, what I was after was a flexible tip that went about 20% down the length and the rest of it was backbone. We built three prototypes, and I'd fish all three of them for a while. I'd pick one of the three that I liked the best, and they'd build three more off that one. And after about three different times of building a set of three, I finally come up with the final version. And to this day, that type of action has really been a part of history, so to speak, in the flipping and pitching arena.
It sure has. I mean, and basically all of bass fishing. And I find it remarkable that what year was that you first developed that Denny Brower flip stick? Do you remember what year that was for Daiwa?
I think it was in the early 80s, maybe around 85. I'm not even sure.
Man, remember the Daiwa team then? Oh my gosh, Denny, you guys were beasts.
Yeah, we had a great bunch of anglers on that team. Everybody designed their own version of a rod. Larry Nixon had a Worman rod.
He sure did.
Great rod. It was just an awesome bunch of anglers. Ken Cook was on the team. He designed a spinnerbait rod.
Yeah, I had them all. Yeah, that's nuts. Do you have those still? Do you still have that flip stick?
I just happen to have one right here that still has the plastic wrapping.
Wow!
If you remember correctly, they collapsed. So
yes!
Back then. This rod has never, ever been fished. So, yeah, I've got a few things laid away, Pat.
Wow, that is freaking amazing. That's nuts. Still wrapped up and the telescopic flip stick. Wow. Hey, there's people freaking out right now. Like, I wish Denny'd put that on eBay, they're saying right now. That's what they're saying. You know that.
Well, you know, everything's got its price.
You heard it, Bass Galaxy. Contact Denny Brower.
You can tell that if I get a 50-gallon barrel of that 10-year-old tin cup, that rod is his.
Wow. All for a barrel of 10-year Denny Brower flipstick? I'm putting in.
Yeah, 50 gallons. That shouldn't be.
Shit, that ain't nothing. That ain't nothing. Like, we got you, Uncle Den. That's amazing. And what was the original the flip reel that went with that? Was that silver Daiwa?
Oh gosh, no! I want to say it was like the TD1, maybe.
Oh, the black one. The black one. Yeah. What'd you say?
That's been a lot of years ago, but I think it was that black reel.
Yeah, I remember now. I remember now. That's awesome. Pretty nuts. So when you redesign the loose ones that you flip with now, is that same 80-20 deal where you're trying to, where you're duplicating kind of your Daiwa deal?
I have not designed any rods for loose yet. They've got a whole line of signature rods that they came out with that some of the other pros designed. But I guess they lost my phone number because I haven't designed anything for them yet.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, you know why? Because all their rods are already 80-20. They're like, well, we already got the Denny Brower flipstick. That's why you're comfortable with them.
No, most of these projects were started before I really got on with Lou's. I was with Strike King and then Lou's and Strike King merged. So that's when my relationship started with Lou's. So they've got really some great rods. The Signature Series, the Custom Pro line, I fish a lot of those, and The Magnum Heavy Cover Custom Pro has got that identical action of the old Daiwa rod that I basically designed. So there's really no reason for me to get too carried away designing.
I got you. But anyway, hey, Andy, do me a favor. Get Mark Copley on the phone. Tell him we want a Brower signature rod immediately. No bullshit. Need this done. There he is. Oh, he's calling up Copley now. Okay, we got that done for you. So, yeah, expect phone call tomorrow, Danny. Signature series. There it is.
Yeah, Copley will call me, I'm sure.
Man, it's pretty cool. Hey, you got any jigs while we're still on flipping? Before we, you got any bait lying around in that?
I've got all kinds of baits, Pat.
Let's see what you got. What are you working with over there, Uncle Den? You got some jigs? We got.
I mean, I've been with striking virtually my whole career, and this is kind of one of the original jigs that I designed. The old pro model. Rattling jig. It's got the rattle on the back. That hook, I don't know if I like it real good anymore, but it makes
hold that right up to the camera as close as you can, okay? Let's see. I think over to your left a little.
How's
yep,
that?
Boom, perfect. You're nailing it. That's
in my name.
Yep, that's it right there. That original head. Show me that hook again, okay? Show everybody the hook. Now Denny's got the original blue. Denny Brower Pro Model jig. Did you trim that week? What's that, Denny?
I walked all over you, Pat.
No, it cut out for a second. Did you trim up that weed guard I see?
No, I didn't trim up the weed guard. The weed guards were available. When you design a jig, obviously you look at the angle of the weed guards being placed, the type of head and all that. So that's what I come up with years ago. And that color electric blue is kind of a unique story. I always complained that there wasn't enough blue in our black and blue jigs. So I finally talked them into building an electric blue jig. And it really became a hot number on cloudy days in clear water. And to this day, I still fish electric blue jig in those conditions. So
cloudy days in clear water.
Yeah, clear water on cloudy days. Electric blue is amazing. Wow. Works. I don't know how it works on smallmouth, but it sure works good on largemouth.
Okay, so does the flipping blue the same thing? So I know they're different colors, but does that the same principle? Is it that blue?
I think the brightness of the blue probably plays a part. I always looked at it this way: when we had black and blue jigs for sale, you only had so many pegs. And the black and blue peg would always be gone because fishermen were catching fish.
Yeah.
So we had like three different black and blue combinations so that we could have more pegs and would never run out of jigs for fishermen to buy. And they were all equally successful. But in certain conditions, I had more confidence in, say, muddy water. I'd fish a black jig with blue flake. And in stained water, I'd fish a black jig with blue accent on the belly, and in clear, cloudy conditions, I'd fish electric blue. So I had little ideas on which one would work best under what conditions.
Aha, I gotcha. So in clear water, in clear conditions, is it green pumpkin?
Exactly.
Gotcha.
100%.
And you never throw the straight blue in the dirty water, in the dirtiest of dirt?
No, I've thrown it, but my success has always been in clear water, cloudy conditions.
Gotcha. Okay.
I get to take water clarity. I look at the sky condition, and I'm going to base my color choice on that and pretty much run with it. Invariably, you don't need a ton of different colors. You just need colors to cover all those conditions.
I got it. I love that you said dirty water is a black jig blue flake, right? Then you got...
Well, Of the different color blues I'm using. Now, we've got a color called Texas Crawfish. It's black. It's got some chartreuse in it. And that's probably my number one dirty, muddy-type water color.
The Texas Craw is the muddy water jig.
Right. Or yeah. Black and blue with the black with the blue flake. Anything dark profile that'll stand out in that dirty water is what you want to fish. You don't want something that blends in like the green pumpkin, the natural colors. Natural colors are for clear water. the real dark, loud colors are for muddy water.
Is the so you go to the in the stained water, you had the black with the blue bottom. And why is that? Like, what's the significance of that to you?
The bath liked it.
There you go. I ain't even asking no more because that's what it is. You just done it for years. It's remarkable the electric blue in the overcast conditions in clear water. Mentally noting that 100%. Thank you for that. By the way, hey, before we leave flipping, one more deal. I need a tip from you. I need a sneaky tip for the Bass Galaxy. Like, whether it's a surefire flipping pattern that seems to work everywhere you go, or just something that's 100% going to put you more fish in the boat flipping. What is it, Ben?
Oh, boy. I don't know if there's one thing I can single out, Pat. Everybody waters a little bit different. Your cover situations are a little bit different. One tip I've always truly believed in, so many guys say, look at a bush. When they're in green bushes or look at a lay down tree and they go, I know that fish is laying in the heaviest part of that cover or laying in the middle of that bush. And that's where they make their flip or make their pitch. And invariably they're already hung up with that fish when he bites because of where they place the bait. And if the fish are aggressive, flip to the edge of the cover, that fish is going to swim out and get that bait before it ever reaches the bottom. And then you do not have to clear him of the cover. So always on your presentation, be thinking about the lane to get that fish to you and try to position your boat, try to position your initial presentation so that you got a better chance of landing that fish when he bites.
Got it. So think about your boat position as well during the presentation of the flip, which a lot of people don't do.
And a lot of people, you know, think they need to go with the wind. And a lot of times you have zero boat control when you're going with the wind. You need to always go into the wind or against the current if possible. And that way you're controlling the speed you're fishing rather than Mother Nature controlling the speed.
Bass are smart creatures, even though they got little pea brains. And here's something that puzzles me. And I want to know what you think about this, Denny. Do you think in flipping situations in tight quarters that water displacement from your boat plays a factor? Should you be pitching ahead of yourself instead of directly in front of you? You know what, or parallel with the boat?
I think it does. And the more pressure a body of water gets, lakes that are real popular, it probably becomes even more a factor, especially with the bigger fish where they've seen so many presentations time and time again, so many boats coming by. The more stealthy you can be, the less movement in the boat, the less noise, the clearer the water, the further I'm going to stay back, obviously. When I'm fishing shallow and I know what the bank's all about, I even got my electronics turned off to try to be a little more stealthy. So there's little things you can do to give you an edge, but man, some of them big bass especially, you need to approach it just like you were out there hunting big whitetail. You need to be very, very stealthy. Realize that that fish is a lot easier to catch if you haven't put him on high alert. And a lot of those fish, they're not even going to stay there if they sense that, you know, the noise, the fish, the pressure waves coming at them. They're going to drop off into deeper water. You're never going to have a chance to catch them to start with.
Yeah, I agree. I think water displacement, that water pressure, as you referred to it, is a big deal in flipping. I think people don't pay attention to that enough, man. I don't know. Hey, School by Danny Brower, amazing television show, and The Bass Class with Danny Brower, amazing television show. Now, School by Danny Brower, I noticed was a little more like harder edge, tough love, Danny. It was more like talking about finding fish and you know, like mechanics and boat control, more derby stuff. Whereas The Bass Class was like techniques. Okay, today we're going to throw buzz bait. Today, you know what I mean? And so I think that all of that, like, are those available right now? Are those anywhere, first off?
Yeah, a lot of it's on Wired to Fish Network right now. You can look at some of the old shows. But when we did the bath class, it was a classroom setting where we filmed a bunch of it actually in the classroom, question and answer type deal. And then we took a lot of it to the water and tried to tie that back and forth together. When we did the school show, we actually had anglers come in and had a camera crew follow them around. And then I would go out and retrace their path and then go back to the studio. And we had kind of tear apart what they did wrong.
You hammered them.
Well, and what they did right.
Yeah.
And liked being criticized real well, I found out.
Hey, I liked when you just went out on the water and did the same shit they did, and you just spanked them most of the time.
Well, that was the idea of the show, to show people what was right and what was wrong. And some of the guys did an excellent job. I had an angler, I want to say from New York, catch an 11-pounder on the show, which was just absolutely awesome.
Mm-hmm. I looked forward to that. And I have a bunch of them in the room here of VHS. I still have a bunch of the VHS ones. But the reason I bring those up is that kind of brings us to this part, Denny Brower, the Derber, because those were accumulations of years of knowledge of tournament fishing. I mean, for those out there that don't know, Denny Brower, you are a Bassmaster Classic winner. You are a Bassmaster Angler of the Year. You are a FLW Angler of the Year. Also, first guy ever on the Wheaties box. Also, I believe you were one of the first Derbers in the inaugural Bass Fishing Hall of Fame. Is that right, Denny?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you are well-versed in tournament bass fishing. And here's when I bring it back to that whole Bassmaster thing. Another way that I relate to you, Denny, and I know you relate and many out there do the same, is that whole escape with Bassmaster and that the magic of that magazine. And I bring it to your personal experience when you, I believe it was a coworker. I think you told me one time you had a coworker give you a Bassmaster magazine. You were still a bricky, I think, at the time. And
exactly, Pat. I was a union bricklayer back then, and one of the guys I worked with was a member of Bass, and he brought one of the Bassmaster magazine to work, and I got to looking at it and decided that was kind of neat. And we fished together quite a bit, and I got the information from him, and gosh, I've been getting Bassmaster ever since. So I'm actually a life member, and you know, I look at what the organization did for me as far as my career. Awesome. You know, I'm a big fan of Major League Fishing now. I also was one of the guys that helped start that. But I think there's room for two organizations, and I think they both play a special part nowadays. But my roots obviously come from good old Bassmaster magazine.
Yeah, and it's crazy how that gave you your start. Like, that kindled the flame. And the fact is, like, you're a perfect example, Denny, of coming up through the ranks. Because, like, I think, you know, like, if I remember, is 78. It was 78. I know it was 78 when you fished the National. It was 78. I remember reading it. So 78, you're in that championship. And it was just a few years before that. But you went up through the ranks. You're a perfect example of Bass Nation, man. Give it up for Denny Brower in the Bass Nation right there. Come on. Come on, bud. That spawned the Derber. Wow. All right, so let's get real. You're two tour guy. You're on FLW and Bassmasters. That's crazy. At the same time, simultaneously. That means at the same time in the Bass Galaxy. That's pretty tough, Dan. How did you do that?
It was a crazy time in my life. We were fishing all the bass, fishing all the FLW, and filming a television show on top of it. So there'd be periods we'd be on the road 3 months at a time, and it was a little crazy, but I really think looking back, it made you a better fisherman because you were on the water constantly and you stayed kind of in tune with the fish. I just think you fished better. So I'm not saying that's a key to success, but I've always felt, you know, the more time on the water, the better you're going to be. And I was kind of forced to be on the water a bunch back then, and it helped.
What was your last victory? 2011?
11 or 12. I think it was 12.
Oh, okay. So was that, and then when did you compete till? What year did you retire? Was it 12?
That's when I retired from, maybe it was 11 and I retired at 12. I'm not even sure, Pat.
And then you fished MLF derbs till when?
Yeah, I fished it a couple of years and won that cup event up in New York. And I fished FLW and won one of their events on Toledo Bend. And
you won that. They
tore that up, so I kind of slowed down a little bit from traveling.
So I got to ask you this. Like 78, Denny Brower the Derber. And let's just say 2011, Denny Brower the Derber. Did you practice the same way? When you got up in the morning and put the boat in the water, were you still practicing the same way, or did technology change that? Did your mind change that?
Looked at it as you needed to work real hard. And I think when I first started, I didn't realize how important that was. But after a couple of years, I knew I might not be able to outsmart everybody there, but they weren't going to outwork me. So I'd always be on the water, be the first boat in the morning. And I wanted to be the last boat out in the evening. And sometimes if there was a trailer left in the parking lot, I was going to go around the corner and fish till that guy took out. Nothing else. I was going to mess with his mind. He knew I was practicing.
I like that you said that, the mental warfare of the Derby there. But I mean, so it was the same way. You were just out there until it happened, or until you thought it was going to happen. Is that how you practiced?
You know, once in a while you get onto something right off the bat and you'd be able to expand multiple days on it. Other times it might be right before you had to go into the registration drawing meeting the last day of practice, and you'd get a little something figured out. Once in a while, you'd get nothing figured out, but you'd eliminate it a lot, and then you'd kind of wipe the slate clean and start over the first day of the tournament, and once in a while, land right and end up winning a tournament, not having a clue really how you're going to win the tournament, but you kept trying to find something that would win. And I always practiced with the mindset to win. Not just to get a check, but to win.
Okay. And always, I think that was always, you said.
Yeah.
Okay.
Too much where I ended up with some really lousy finishes down there.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of guys fish conservatively. I like how you said you always fish to win.
Yeah. I just think it raises your percentages to have everything finally go right. You start fishing conservative and you're just never going to win. I think the attitude to have is, in order to finish first, you can't be afraid to finish last. And it kind of depends a little bit, I guess, where you're at in your career. Once I got established, I even got probably more firmly embedded in that belief and started totally fishing that way 100% of the time. Where early in the career, you'd always kind of look at points and you'd look at angle of the year and things like that. Once I won one of those, then my whole focus was just on winning.
Yeah, it's kind of like you tasted the blood. The bleed's red, you know. You
got to look at it from a monetary standpoint. I was looking at the whole deal as a business, and it was a business I loved. But in order to be successful in that business, you had to win, because all the money was top heavy, and really all the recognition to develop sponsorships came from winning. To establish name recognition. So winning was very, very important, and to be successful in the sports. So that's where your focus needed to be.
The money was top heavy. I like how you said that. And here's something else. It's, you see a lot of anglers get into that, and you can't blame them, Denny. Historically, we see it. It's like, holy shit, I got to pay the light bill. I better freaking go catch five spots. You know what I mean?
With that, Pat, because everybody's in a different scenario, money-wise, career-wise, et cetera. And when you're first starting out, there's nothing wrong with trying to get that consistency. But sooner or later, if you want to move to that next level, you got to win. So you got to I understand both sides of the story. And like I say, I was real guilty of maybe taking it too far and ended up with some really poor finishes where I should have been a little more conservative in some tournaments.
Yeah, but I think it's amazing that you said you just gave zero Fs about anything but winning the whole time. Day one, that's what you did. Did you practice to find flipping fish most of the time? To find flip fish?
Analyze the lake, whether it was high or low, what the conditions were, how much rainfall they had had, whether there was going to be enough cover and enough dirty water where you could win it with a flipping and pitching technique, whether I thought it was going to take something else to win. And that's how I was going to fish it, with whatever technique I thought gave me the best opportunity to win. Now, obviously, I was going to try to force the flipping and pitching technique a little bit if the conditions allowed.
Gotcha. Flipping's a tough deal, too. It's mentally tough. And you mentioned a little bit about messing with your competitors mentally. Give me an example of chirping somebody. Like, give me a way to psychologically do warfare on a fellow derber. How can you give me some warfare tactics from Denny Brower? How can you mess with someone's mind?
Oh, I don't do any of that, Pat.
Come on, Uncle Den. Give us some sneaky Denny Brower mental warfare. Come on.
No, I just really don't do any of that. You know,
I'm doing it right now.
Maybe have a few dozen of the wrong baits laying on the deck, or you know, chew up a bunch of soft plastics on my own and throw them out there. But really, there's some things we don't need to go into.
There's because it's so psychological, this freaking game of fishing. Like, I'm going to give you an example. Your buddy Seth, there was a certain flipping bait, actual flipping bait, not freaking bait, but flipping bait that Matthew Robertson and I were pretty fond of. And fighters like, that bait sucks. You're never going to catch nothing on that thing. It stinks. So here goes. Fighter's just cracking him on his bait, right? Doink it, doink it, doink it, doink, doink, doink. Told you that bait sucks. Might as well throw him all away. But me and Robertson were cracking him on him. But now in our mind, you know, previously, but now in our mind, that's the worst bait in the world, and we can never throw it again. It's like, that's psychological warfare. And you just throwing, like, false baits on the deck, that's...
That, and you know, if I was on a really good flipping bite, I might just have one rod out there and just let them know what the game was going to be about. There were other times I would have a totally different set of rods in the rod locker that I was going to get out once I got to the spot. So, you know, you can do little things like that. And, you know, everybody assumes, you know, like back in the day, if Jimmy Houston was leading a tournament, he was throwing a spinner bait. If Clun was leading, he was throwing a crank bait. If I was leading, I was, you know, probably flipping. Nixon was probably worming. Everybody assumes that. So it's kind of neat when you're catching them some other way. So you don't really fool anybody.
It really is. I think it's a pretty cool deal, man, that you got the psychologicals, too. Denny Brower's got the psychologicals.
A lot of times all you got to do is give him the look, Pat.
Yeah, man, you're the warden, dude.
Man.
Turn them to stone. Hey, so is that like the deal? Like, okay, what's on the water psychological warfare? So, like, let's say that you're out there bassing, and here comes in 2006 Kevin Van Dam, and it's the first year of the Elite Series, and it looks like Kevin's got his trolling motor on high, but you're coming around this way, and Kevin's going to an area that you're going to flip, but Kevin's coming around. How does Denny Brower keep Kevin Van Dam off his shit? How do you do it?
I don't. I go somewhere else.
Really?
Yeah, I think that was part of the key to run patterns rather than fighting over spots. I never had a spot that I was really that proud of in most tournaments. Most of the time, I was just running patterns, and I tried to get away from the boat traffic. A lot of times I'd fish areas that other people were ignoring. So I had very few situations where I really had any problems with other boats.
Gotcha. Interesting. And if it did happen, you were like, take it, bud. You must want it more than me, I guess.
I may come back later and catch the fish that he didn't catch, you know.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, that's the attitude right there. Because there's a lot of guys, I mean, so if they're acting all thirsty, let them have it.
Yeah, you know, you can get so mentally wrapped up in worrying about a spot and worrying about other anglers and get into the conflict that it can really throw your whole game plan off. And you just can't worry about stuff like that. You really got to focus on catching fish.
Hey, you watch a lot of Bassmaster still?
I do. I still enjoy watching the different tournaments. And obviously, some of the venues they go to where I've got history on, I sit there and kind of wish I was there. I know they just had one at Santee Cooper.
Yeah,
but it was crazy watching that.
Oh, God. Yeah, Drew kicked ass there, that's for sure. Hey, what's the biggest mistake you see a lot of these younger Bassmasters making? You ever watching the show or watching the live, and you're like, man, you just screwed up. Like, is there anything you see happening that you wish you could just, like, have those coach earphones in and be like, okay, what I'm going to need you to do is run an audible, do a button hook in the end zone, I'm going to hit you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If I see one thing, it's fish landing skills, making that decision. Should I, you know, boat flip a fish? Should I lip a fish? I just see a lot of fish lost at the boat, where they're being overplayed or underplayed. I see a lot of grabbing the line that takes place.
You hate that. You hate the grabbing the line. You hate grabbing the line.
I you're dead sticking the bait. All he's got to do is jerk his head sideways and you pull the lure right out of him. I see a lot of the crossover with the rod, which a lot of times that totally moves the bait in the fish's mouth.
Wait, what's that crossover with the rod?
Where they swing the rod over to try to get the fish and swing it back, do all that like they're in a sword fight. Taking any of that, but you know, zone. But if it works for them, fine. But all I'm saying is that's one area that I do see a lot of the guys where they could improve a little bit is on the fish management once they get the fish hooked.
Okay, so from what I took from that is don't grab the line and keep the fish coming in the same direction.
Exactly. Even if you got to lead him around the boat, but that crossover stuff. A lot of times all that does is forces the fish to come up and jump, moves the bait in his mouth, and you end up losing more fish because of it.
Gotcha.
Now, if you see that fish, say you got a jerk bait on and he's just got one hook in him, that crossover is a good technique to try to get another hook in if that's the direction you want to go. But you're risking pulling that one hook out when you do that.
Is that the number one reason you see anglers lose fish? Is that direction change, or is it not enough pressure on the fish? Is it?
I just think it's a combination of things. I think that's something they really need to focus on, keeping that pressure on the fish, not letting him get slack, try to keep him from jumping, and definitely don't grab the damn line.
Don't do it. Hey, do you, when you were out there derbing, like, be honest with me, were there days that you were just like, I'm beat, I want to go to the house, this day sucks, I'm done? And how did you know?
No, I never felt that attitude at all unless I was out of winning. In other words, if I really sucked the first day of the tournament and knew there was no coming back, I was ready to go to the next event and just pull up stakes and go. Then it became a deal to where, okay, I can't win anymore. I blew it on the first day. Let's see if we can sell each check somehow. And that took all the fun out of it for me because you were no longer essentially fishing to win.
Yeah, especially a guy like you. That's nuts, man. Hey, Durbin played a toll on your body. I mean, let's be real about it. I think pretty much every ailment that you – now, correct me if I'm wrong. I think you've had back, shoulder issues, all – You're still in pain daily, aren't you, Denny?
Tin cup helps. No, yeah, you know, that all that rough water over the years, I'm sure, played a part. But I had a couple of freak accidents, and I ended up having 5 major back surgeries, 4 lumbar, 1 cervical fusion. Had 2 knee replacements. The same knee replaced where I tore it up on Toledo Bend and actually broke an artificial titanium knee, which is You really got to work hard to do that.
Only Denny Brower.
Complete titanium shoulder put in on my flipping shoulder.
Heck
so
yes.
I got a right titanium knee. I got a left titanium shoulder. And that's just a few of the major things. Of course, I had a virus attack my heart, which was the reason I retired. And
yes.
It took out part of the heart capacity in that. So it made it a lot tougher being out there on them long days. So all those little things played a part. But, shoot, I'm doing good and I feel good. And, I can still go fishing. That's the main thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's for sure. And you're out there fishing all the time. But I got to say, I kind of think it's really freaking cool that you're like one of the best flippers of all time and you have a titanium shoulder. That's pretty badass.
Well, I can still do what I need to do and still can set the hook. So
yeah, you're like a $6 million man. You're like a robot flipper now. You're robo flipper. You're Denny Brower robo flipper.
You don't want to add up all the medical bills.
Take away that first million dollar bass man, wouldn't it? Oh, my goodness. Hey, but I mean, persevering, after all that. But the point is, tournament fishing, what were you at it, Denny? 46 years or something? 42?
Jeez. Yeah, I was at it a long time, that's for sure.
That's
I still fish a few events, but the traveling, I think, is what I got burned out more than anything. Dragging a boat from one end of the country to the other and dealing with traffic and dealing with some of the logistics where we had to stay. And actually, some of the venues we went to weren't that enjoyable. Where now I fish when I want, where I want. I actually fish more now than I did when I was on tour because I'm not traveling all the time. When you go to an average tournament, you might be traveling 2 days there or 2 days back and have a dead day in between there somewhere. So those are days you're not on the water. Now I can be on the water whenever I want.
Yeah, it's I like that too. I like the same thing, the same feeling. Hey, speaking of feelings there, I asked this to a lot of champions and you won, 17, 18, 19, 20, 24 times out there. Like, did you get those feelings? Like, did you have those victory feelings in the majority of those victories, Denny?
Not in the majority of them, but it happened a few times where, before the tournament started, I'd just sit down and tell my wife and Chad when he was on the tour that I was going to win the event unless something really stupid happened, and you'd end up winning the event. You just felt that strong in everything you had going on. But there's so many variables. You don't know whether some other anglers have found the same fish. You don't know whether suddenly a weather pattern can change. I look at the one classic that I felt I was going to win the event, and then you had your dead day right before the event, and they dropped the lake 3 feet. I ended up, those fish totally swam away. So you never know. But, yeah, you do get those feelings now and then. Sometimes they come true. And then I've had events where everything just kind of went the other way. And I ended up having a poor event when I thought I was going to win the event.
It's and it seems to work that way sometimes for a lot of great champions. Like they say, I'll have a shit practice. But then all of a sudden, they're out there come Derb Day and they're cracking them, Seems to happen.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's making the right decisions and just having a lot of confidence in your ability. And if you've got confidence in your ability, a fish is a fish from one end of the country to the other. And normally you can make something happen.
Hey, yeah. What technique do you hate the most? Hate's a strong word. But what technique do you just hate the most?
I think when I was fishing the tournaments full-time, Pat, it was finesse fishing. Not that I didn't do it. The year I won Angler of the Year, I caught like 30% of my fish that year on a light line and spinning equipment just because I was wanting to win Angler of the Year. I knew how important it was to get a limit every day. So once in a while, I'd have to get out the spinning rod and the tube and, fill a limit that way. But I hate doing that because I knew I probably wasn't going to win. I was catching little fish doing it. And some of them guys got so good at it, obviously they were winning with it, catching fish. And I wasn't one of those guys. And so after I retired, we moved down here to this Clearwater Lake, Lake Amistad. I decided I was going to learn how to drop shot and be halfway good at it. And I've got a lot of confidence in it now. When we get the right conditions, I feel I can go out there and catch those fish 60, 70 foot deep and, wow, and compete with big. So,
are you on that forward facing deal?
Well, as of 2 days ago.
Okay.
I just new Ranger Mercury rig up. I had to go up and work the World Fishing Fair up in Springfield, brought the new boat home with me Sunday. And I've had 2 days with the Mega Live out on the water and totally impressed with what I can see. I can see my bait out there, 70, 75 feet going to the bottom. I saw five fish out there the first day, and I threw a cast where I thought they would be, and I see my baits start to sink, and I see one of those five fish come racing up to my bait, and I'm sure I sent the hook about 3 feet before he ever got to it. Well, so there's a little bit of a learning curve for me yet, but it's exciting, and I see the good things about it, and I see the bad things. You see a lot of fish, but it's almost like regular sight fishing. Not all fish can be caught. I'm not sure everything I'm looking at is bass yet. So I'll get better with it. But
you're going to smash them. You're going to smash them when you learn that on Amistad.
Well, yeah, I enjoy learning, and it's another tool. So it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, I think you're going to smash them. Hey, I want to remind everybody out there watching, if you haven't liked and shared the live feed, still got a chance to win the Tin Cup Whiskey Mega Prize. And also, we're going to take a couple Zoomers here. I think coming up in a little bit. But I want to get back onto this thing. So do you think America's gotten soft, Denny? Do you think America's gotten soft?
Oh, I think in a lot of ways, probably. But I don't know. You can look at that a lot of different ways, Pat. It depends on what direction you're going with that statement.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that I'm bringing it. Here's how I'm going with that statement. I'm bringing it all the way back to how we talked about at the beginning of the show, how you OG proper bassin' man, kind of like maybe first were the first tough love in bassin'. Like, this is what's up. This is kind of how it is. Now it seems these days that if you maybe you're a little too forward or direct or the whole tough love approach, it's just not maybe even accepted anymore. It's like you're bullying or whatever. Do you know what I'm getting at?
No.
Look at you smiling. Look at you smiling. I don't know why it's like that. Why is it like that? Tell me. Give me wisdom.
Oh, I don't know. Society is continually changing, so things change on how people perceive things, and everybody wants to be offended nowadays, and so I guess you got to be a little more careful, but it's probably a good thing I live where there's not a lot of humanity.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it, for example, like, if some of the ways were implemented in old school bassin, how things happened in the parking lot, how things happened off the water, how things happened on the water. People just have thinner skin these days, and I don't know why. I don't know why, Dan, in bassin, it seems.
I think there's probably more pressure, more guys fighting for a smaller pie, so to speak. I really don't know the answer to that, Pat. I'm not out there, so I don't really know how the game's changed nowadays. I hear bits and pieces that there's not as much respect on the water as there used to be. But then I see other situations where I think the guys really played it totally right and are doing a great job. So I don't know how much has changed out there. Some of it may just be perception.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. Just because it could just be I'm getting old, then.
We're all getting old, and it sure beats the option.
Hey, you know, I got to look back at the history of things and the history of bass fishing, and I can't help that that think that maybe just like you said before that that's okay, there's bass, is that MLF, everything else, but I got to be honest with you, in my perfect world, Denny, there's one bass fishing league, and then there's MLF on Sunday with the cups. And like, remember, like the one you won. You know, everybody, all us bassing guys, had that deal on our DVRs, and we'd watch it on Sunday nights. But I think that like it would just be an amazing place in the bass galaxy if there's one league, and then there's farm league. And qualifying league, and if you don't qualify, and if you don't perform in the professional league, you're out. But legends can fish whenever they want. Like, you could even hop in. Like, Denny, you could hop in at the next derp. You could be, oh, I'm going to Chick tomorrow and go fish. Like, that's how it should be. But I think one league. Agree or disagree with that and tell me why.
I think in a perfect world, yeah, that might be the way to go. I just don't think we're there yet. And for a lot of reasons, obviously. Financial reasons probably play the number one part. And how many people do you want on the water at one time? It really changes the venues you can go to, et cetera. So I think there's a lot of things you need to look at. But it would be nice where all your top anglers in the world could be competing against each other. And right now, I think both tours have a lot of good anglers that will never, ever get a chance to compete against each other. So from that aspect, you always want to win a tournament against the best. And I'm not sure that's happening right now because they're kind of spread out between the two leagues.
But again, if you go back to that qualifying factor, it's just the best of the best anyway, and it's everybody's going to stay thirsty to get to that upper echelon, you know?
But how many anglers can one tour support?
I guess that's right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
yeah. Guys, right now you got two different guys are going to win in a week, where if you got one tour, you got one guy. So the odds of a guy developing name recognition go down. But I understand where you're coming from, and I don't know whether we can ever go back to that. But when the sport was at its purest, as far as I'm concerned, in the history of the sport, was back when Bass was doing the top 100 series, where all 100 anglers fished all 4 days. That made you involve a lot more strategy in it. There was no cuts. There was no getting lucky with a big stringer one day. And it was kind of like Ray Scott always said, the cream would rise to the top.
Yeah.
And it literally happened.
Yeah. I like how you said that. Ray Scott said that the cream would always rise to the top. Hey, Denny, I gotta tell a little story. That Linda shared with me earlier, okay, about how, and you, why don't you, like, maybe you could tell us the story, and those that don't know, Linda's one of your besties, and she goes fishing with you all the time, and we love how Linda loves Stray Cast, too, and we love how she loves Tin Cup, too, and she told me you made her cry once on the water. Is that true, Denny?
No, she makes that stuff up.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about tough love. We're talking about being tough on people and telling them like it is, and we hear you're out there fishing with Linda, and you let her have it one day. You're the warden, bud.
Well, I'm sure I probably did. Linda's husband, before he passed away, was a good friend of mine, and he never ever cut her any slack. So when she started to fish them with me, I figured, why should I?
And she's a tough cookie too. I mean, I could tell she's a proper bassing gal in her own right, because she told me that she let you have it back one time because you were out there, you guys were throwing some jigs out there, and she got hung up, and you're like, gosh, dang it, you're hung up again. You're like, she's like, hey, you got 500 of these things with your picture on them in the garage, and you're going to yell at me about hanging up a dang bait?
Yeah, we're not even going to go there.
That's outstanding. Hey, I got to tell you, Denny, it's been an amazing time here. I want to thank you and especially Linda for all the support that she gives StrayCast. And I guess we're having some problem on our Zoom dealers. I don't know what the heck's going on with this thing with I'm getting the signals over here, but so I don't know if we're going to be able to do that part of it. But what I got here, Dan, I want to tell you is every time you come on this show, we learn so much. No matter if it's a short appearance, a long appearance, your knowledge is overwhelming. It's amazing. We appreciate it. Thanks, Denny.
Well, yeah, Pat, I appreciate you having me on. It means a lot.
Yeah, man, and it really does. It means a lot that you want to hang out with us and even be associated with us sometimes.
You're not that bad.
Thanks, bud. Hey, Fighter and I are going to come see you over there.
Talk's cheap. You keep saying that.
We're planning it. Seth won't go when it's hot, so we got to go when it's cold because he doesn't want to be hot. He won angler of the year. He won angler of the year, bud.
Yeah, I know. You guys are welcome anytime, hot or cold.
Hey, Denny, again, thanks for all the support. If people don't already follow Denny Brower on Instagram, follow him on Instagram, follow him on Facebook. The Denny Brower YouTube channel, you want to just do something, Google Denny Brower, you'll get in a wormhole of bass and goodness. And once again, Bass Galaxy, give it up for the legend, the icon, Denny Brower. Thanks, Uncle Den.
Thanks, Pat.
Talk to you soon. Peace.
All right.
A lot of knowledge there. Wow. Yikes. Holy crikeys. That was absolutely outstanding. I learned three things tonight. Just three things. That's all I did. What are you doing now, Ginge? What's on the agenda? What do you have planned next? If you want a break, then go to break, or I can bring the Luke in. Let's bring Luke in. Okay. Yeah, let's go. We got a grand prize poobah to give away. Sinks that other thing on the Zoom wasn't happening there. I don't know what the heck that deal is all about. Dang Zooms. What do we got? Foley?
Denny Brower taught us lots of things.
What the heck is that? Uh-oh. Is that 10-year? Is that 10-year music? I hear. Oh, my God. There's no way this guy's coming back on. He ain't going to make it. There's no way that Courtney and Luke are going to make it back on here tonight after being on the 10-year all night. It's been how long has this been, this show? It's been 2 hours. Oh, wait, there they are. Holy cow, you made it.
I'm back.
I brought my pencil. Give me something to write on, man.
That's right.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I think I might be ready for bed, but other than that, I'm all right.
You both look very, very pie-y. Is pie-y a word? You look very pie-y. Pie-y.
What
does that even mean?
I think he says we want a piece of pie.
No, you're very.
There's a pie over there on the counter.
Yeah. It's world history. See the globe right there, bud?
Yeah.
Did you guys enjoy the Denny Brower show?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a lot of knowledge in one spot right there, Luke.
Sure is.
Yeah, tomorrow you better rewatch it so you remember some stuff.
Oh, I definitely am. I'm definitely going to rewatch it.
Courtney, are you ready to catch bass yet?
I was on the boat on, what was that, Sunday, actually. Sunday.
Oh, you were on the boat Sunday.
Yeah.
I was,
she
yeah.
She didn't cast a lure. Yeah.
Maya and I went to look at the pelicans.
Yeah, we got pelicans in Indiana. What's up with that, Pat?
I don't know. It's global warming and Ronavirus.
Yeah, like I don't even know what's going on.
And gas prices.
Yeah, we looked it up. Apparently, the population is going like skyrocketing or something.
All right. Well, you come out here with foals and we'll go catching. All right, Veronica
Bond. You're not too far from us, right? Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Well, Foles, when are you coming out here? Aren't you supposed to be coming to see me?
Not in July.
Yeah, next week. Next week I'll be out.
I heard that next one before.
No, I'll be up next week.
Hey, you know who's awesome, Luke?
You're not coming.
Besides you. You know who's awesome besides you and Veronica Vaughn, Courtney over there?
Who?
Tin Cup Whiskey.
Right.
Yeah, Tin Cup Whiskey's awesome for their support of Stray Cast and also for their support of the Bass Galaxy. And I know tonight you got the mega, super, crazy giveaway pack tonight, and you got a lucky winner. And
yes.
And now, Ginge, what do you want to give them? What do you guys want? You want fanfares, drum rolls? What do you want?
I'd like a little bit of a drum roll, please.
Oh, you seem like a drum roll kind of guy.
Yeah. I am.
Yeah, you kind of seem that way. Yeah.
I've been drinking whiskey all night. I need
He's drinking
a drum
whiskey
roll.
To the party tonight, and he's looking for somebody to squeeze. Dan, 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 dan. I'm full of songs. I'm a songbird of my generation.
Yeah, you are.
All right, yes, you got a winner? You got a drum roll?
Yes, we do.
Let's tap it down. Get it, Foles. Ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the Tin Cup Whiskey Extravaganza pack on the Brower Show is
Brian Frank.
Brian Frank. Heck yes.
Yes.
Heck yes. Foley, you're awesome. You
Brian
make good
Frank.
Stuff. Yeah, Brian Frank.
Brian Frank.
Oh, there's that's
heck
the echo.
Yes.
Oh, I like when it does this sometimes.
Heck yes.
Foley, you're awesome. Wanna hold
you
on
make
to
good
love.
Stuff.
You want a whole lot of love? I was trying to get the echo going again, like Zeppelin. Hey, Foles, you make stuff happen. You make stuff happen. You spoke to a Stray Cast viewer, I believe is, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike?
Yeah.
Mike Graves? Groves?
Groves.
Groves.
Yeah, Groves.
Former Derber bud of yours.
I drew him in a tournament back when I fished the Bass Opens.
Happens to be a Stray Cast viewer. We made him mad because he didn't get a prize, but we made it up. We made it
we
up.
Did.
Mike's awesome. We appreciate him watching the show every week. And the reason I bring that up is, like, you made a big deal in Mike's life. Like, you hooked him up, and I know you made Mike happy. And you make a lot of people happy, Luke. And that's a big deal. So Bass Galaxy, give it up for Luke Foley, for Courtney. And the magic of Tin Cup Whiskey, the official brown liquor of Bassin. That's pretty cool, man. And thanks for hooking up Mike Gross over there, bud. That's pretty cool. Taking care of
him. Yeah, he's a good dude. He's an old friend.
Yeah, man. Hey, well, you guys rest up. Hit the satchel. Stay cool like the other side of the pillow. Don't take wooden nickels and don't eat at restaurants named Mom's. Okay? Yeah, that's my advice for today.
Thank you, Pat.
Yeah. Hey, let's close. I got an idea. Let's close with a song, all three of us.
Okay, what song is this?
It's called the Stray Cast sponsor song.
Oh,
yeah, hold on. I'm going to need a guitar for this. Hold on, I'll be right back.
All right.
I just happen to have one right here.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Okay, here we go. All right. Here it goes. You ready, Foles?
I'm ready.
You ready?
I'm ready.
It's kind of like got a little Seeger feel. I don't know. I'm just making it up right now.
I love Bob Seeger.
Little too tall. Could have used a few pounds. That was not the song already.
Great song.
I'd like to thank...
The Night Moves.
Night Moves. Amphibia. Amphibia Iger. We're always throwing shade. Even at night. The Amphibia.
Amphibia.
Ichikawa.
Oh, for Night Moves. That's fantastic.
Ichikawa, bud. It's venomous poison on the tips. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Why you keep playing with your hair, Courtney? Why are you doing that?
I'm tired.
During the closing song. Like to thank Bravarni and Line and Lure. We'd like to thank Alpha and Impulse Lithium. Also, Tin Cup Whiskey for the giveaway. Half a spot official if you haven't already. You better download the app. Abu, Xenon, and Berkeley. Maxent and Bite Me Components and Sims keeps me toasty and TH Marine and Power Poe on a stray cast rock and roll fishing show. We are the anarchists and we are the good night. We're Stray Cast. We're the official glorified version of a Bass and Talk show, fully with a shot of the 10-year. We're out. Peace.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Dance.
No, just kidding. This is Pat. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Stray Cast on iTunes and leave a review. Tell us what you think. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. Thanks for listening. Peace!